else, apparently, is going to get taken down because you don't see that stuff on the highways. And the two times that we tried to do it, it got taken down. So
well, that's because you're the only two people in the country who disagree with our wise leader's policy.
Robert.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, clearly that's not the case. So,
well, so you put up a banner the first time that said...
Oh, you're asking me, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
It said, that's okay. It said, at what cost? And it was intended to be the follow-up to a banner that would go in front of it that said, are you buying this war? And, you know, we were alluding, it really came out of this idea of, like, you know, people are spending oodles and oodles of dollars just to keep their oil addiction up and buying gas for their cars, and, you know, the cars are getting bigger and using more gas all the time and that kind of thing. And, you know, people are actually buying this war by buying gas and oil all the time, and they're paying for this thing to continue. And so it sort of came out of that idea, and then it was like, the answer to that is another question, at what cost? And that cost is, yes, your out-of-pocket expenses, but it's at the cost of, you know, millions of people dying in Afghanistan, and the same war is the same war that's killing millions of people in Iraq and has been for the last decade.
Now, what kind of support have you gotten locally? I mean, you certainly got Paul Sanford, local attorney, who was also helping Camp Paradise for a while. You got this attorney, Mr. Benjamin.
Uh-huh.
But what about more traditional groups like the Resource Center for Nonviolence or the Resource Center for Inaction, as I like to call it, which, you know, I haven't seen anything from them urging an end to the bombing. Did I miss that resolution? Perhaps I did.
They did put out a statement after September 11th that...
Perhaps I missed it.
Yeah, and I only saw it via email, and I would hate to misquote them,
well,
so I won't try to say what they
Scott
said, but it certainly wasn't rah-rah sending the truth.
No, but I know that Scott Kennedy, for example, is the co-founder of the Resource Center for Nonviolence, also on the Santa Cruz City Council, and at no time has he proposed a resolution that I'm aware of that asks that the bombing be stopped.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so, that would be nice. I like that idea.
I mean, even if he loses, you know, one could at least feel that there's some people who have the courage to stand up, as two strange women stood up and unfurled a bedsheet. So, what kind of, I mean, are you getting, is there a defense fund being formed? Are bedsheet banditistas appearing all over town? What's going on?
Well, let's see. Let's start with the lawyer. And you mentioned that there's a lawyer. There's actually a couple of lawyers out of, this is the hard part for me. It's like Comstock, Thompson, Brennan, and Contz, I think, is the law firm. I'm really bad at that.
You know, I'm realizing something, Amy. I didn't have a lot of hope you were going to call me back, but you have faithfully kept touch with Free Radio, and, you know, I've even seen you at earlier activities, like at the Farmer's Market, when we were trying to make sure that we had some local freedom of assembly. That would be very nice, and it was nice when we got that restored. But I have a problem. I'm having a conflict because someone's due to call in. In fact, he's overdue, and I'm late in calling him. And I'm
wondering. Cutting me off.
I'm cutting you off, man.
I was just getting going on.
You were rolling,
there.
And people want to hear you, and they're going to say, "What the hell are you doing, cutting off this woman who's the front, the major story?"
It'll be the end of your show, but that's fine.
My show,
the choices
my show
make,
is
Robert.
History, man. But what I would like to do is ask you: is it possible to get you on Sunday, where I won't cut you off because you'll have 3.5 hours? You won't have that entire time, but some of it.
Possibly. I actually have something going on Sunday, but maybe we could talk off air about our scheduling.
Let's do that, because I want to hear more. In fact, I want this blow-by-blow deal of what happened in federal court sounds to me to be fascinating.
I would like to just say one thing about the local support.
Right.
That we have gotten a lot of phone calls, and even just yesterday we got a letter from this guy who lives in Richmond, who saw us on some news channel in San Francisco, and he says, and I quote, you know, I support all this blah, 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 and I question the war, and he writes, and I'm not even a liberal, !, which is just like, it's really heartening, and all these people are really putting forward, like, if there's anything we can do, let us know, but we don't really have anything for people to do, so maybe the thing for people to do is to think of what people could do to sort of culminate this into an action or something that speaks to the issues.
What about a free speech rally and get-together that you host along with some other speakers to actually look for concrete responses? I mean, I know Santa Cruz in the past has had some pretty ferocious responses to the bombing. I mean, we blocked the freeways in 1990-91.
Right.
You know, and some who feel that that was, you know, the wrong thing to do. I remember people like Scott Kennedy trying to tell everybody, go home, you know, be peaceful, be quiet, that sort of thing. And I'm not saying that, you know, that being violent is a good idea, but sometimes speaking out loudly and angrily is an excellent and essential idea from my perspective. So you are now in a position to do something, I think, very, very strong. You have, you know, not only getting support from all those right-wing Republicans that you never thought you were allies with, and I have allies who are right-wing Republicans. Wiley Drake in Buena Park, California, puts up homeless people in his church and gets arrested for it, and I'm 100% behind him.
Uh-huh.
He also wants to ban gay people in certain areas, or ban, you know, partnership benefits for gays at Disneyland. I think he's way up shit creek on that. However, you know, I think we've got to, on issues that we agree on, we've got to come together on and support each other on, even if we disagree on other ones. So is there a you didn't want me to give out your phone number on the air, as we had before, by the way. So
Oh, really?
I think we did, but you don't, that doesn't mean you have to do it now.
Yeah, let's not.
So if people want to reach Amy, I think they can leave a message on the Huff line. That's 423-HUFF.
That's
Huff is
idea.
My line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. I will pass on calls to you, Amy.
And I'm
hoping that we can get you back on the air. Probably it'll be ABC in 60 Minutes that has you next. So
there you are, yes.
This was our one chance.
I got Oprah going, and then, you know.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, it sounds to me like it is very rare to see this kind of public dissent. I understand there was a woman named Rebecca on campus who did something and then got quickly snuffed. Can you give us, I know we're taking away Charlie's time, but give us a little brief...
I know very little about that. In fact, someone just brought that to our attention just within the last couple of days, and it's too bad because, you know, it'd be great to have been mentioning that as another example.
I've been trying to. This is Rebecca Hall we're talking about, and I don't have her name, her phone number. I called her Rebecca Hall on the phone book. If anybody has any information about Rebecca Hall and what was it she was supposed to have done, I read it.
As far as I understand it, she was wheat pasting for either an event or something that said, you know, question the war or something to that effect, and the cops told her she was either going to get fined or thrown in jail if she didn't take them all down, and then they impounded her car, and I don't know how that whole sequence of events played out, but she has been personally wronged in a pretty serious way for doing nothing illegal, as far as I can see it. And just
well, wheat pasting may be illegal, but it may be an advisable activity in cases of national crisis. I mean, it's certainly less destructive than bombing people in Afghanistan day after day after day in search of the elusive but extremely evil Osama bin Laden. You know...
Anyway, if Rebecca or anybody who knows, that's great. We would love to get more information about it because undoubtedly we'll be talking to more media. We'd love to talk about Rebecca's case, and who knows, maybe there's a lawyer out there who wants to take on her case too, you know.
Well, you know, the war itself is such an under-addressed issue. I mean, I go on and on about the mini war against the homeless, but of course they are not getting bombed every day with cluster bombs and, you know, high-intensity smart bombs and who knows, uranium-depleted weapons probably and all this kind of stuff, which every day. And we don't hear about it, we don't see about it, we just see the media fluff and the hype in front of it. And there's been a lot of good programming on Santa Cruz Free Radio Santa Cruz about the issue nationally, but in terms of the local response, you too, and perhaps Rebecca Hall, the only people I've heard about who are doing anything in any concrete way, and it's just, to me, horrible and pathetic. And I would like to see that issue raised and what we can do about it. And again, if you want to get in touch with Amy Courtney, who we've been talking to, please give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. We're hoping to kidnap her and have her on the air next Sunday when our show comes back from 10 to 1:30 in the afternoon. Anything else you want to say, Amy, before
I just want to point out that it looks like our right to assembly is being threatened right there at the corner with right in front of New Leaf and the latest plan to play Hitler's favorite, Wagner, is most ironic over the airwaves there to get the quote-unquote hippies out, and I think that that's an important
issue. Maybe you'd be willing to come down and do a sort of a protest, a support protest on their behalf with a bedsheet that supports them.
You love the bed sheets. You
those,
love
listen,
them.
I've got sex on the brain, and if it, you know, well, what can I say?
Oh, Lord, have mercy.
But I think that would be a nice tie-in. I mean, civil rights, you know, nationally are always sort of more politically acceptable for the, although not apparently not politically acceptable enough to the city council to pass a resolution. Uh-huh. They don't mind, you know, spending eons of time talking about a peace monument. When it comes to taking a peace action, we don't see too much going down there. Mm-hmm. But it,
right, like the invitation, and I will consider that.
Please.
Yeah.
And thank you for being on.
Yeah, thanks, Robert.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. I'd like to apologize for the last 3 minutes of dead air. That's what happens when you talk to a mic that isn't on. There you have it. My apologies, folks. So a couple of quick announcements for you. Next week, Cal Perg's homelessness action kind of orientation session is going to be happening at the second story of the Student Center. I got to say that fast a few times. On UCSC campus, 7 p.m. on January 31st. You can get more information by calling Huff UCSC or Students Against the Sleeping Ban. The phone number to call is 427-0270, 427-0270. Nine Tales to the Traitor from Vermont with Oliver Brown will be happening at the Poet and Patriot tonight at 9 p.m. Actually, tonight. We've missed an opportunity to tell you about that Christopher Crone is flapping his gums on Voices from the Village on Club Cruise, there you go. That's the twice-weekly, half-hour TV community show, community TV show, from 7 to 7:30, hosted by Becky Johnson frequently, or at least produced by her, and occasionally hosted by her, and occasionally hosted, I guess this one is hosted by her. She talks to the mayor, Candy Graham Crone, as I call him, because he always has some nice, sweet things to say, but when it comes to actually getting beyond the superficials, we find he just isn't there. Whether it's rent control, the sleeping ban, affordable housing, community control of police, public statements on the war, old Christopher is, he just ain't there. However, he will be, actually, we're going to be analyzing Christopher Crone's hour and a half long performance on Talk About a week ago Wednesday. Michael Samet was good enough to lend me the tape. I've made some selections, and we hope to have in the studio with us an analyst to analyze Mayor Crone. I don't know if it's worth our time, but unfortunately we're saddled with him, so we better analyze him and figure out what's going on before, I don't know, we all fall asleep and get arrested for violating the sleeping ban. And, of course, we're going to be talking about the sleeping ban next Sunday when we have 3.5 hours to really go into this at greater length. Right now we are going to try to contact Public Defender Charlie Stevens at his home, and that's, of course, a rarity. You don't usually get attorneys who are willing to be called home at night. There are a few exceptions. Let's see if we can get through to the man.
Hello?
Is this Charlie Stevens?
Yes, Robert. How are you doing?
I'm good. Are you able to hear our show? Have you been listening?
I was indeed. Very nice show this evening.
Well, I apologize for, essentially, we were going to try to give you a little more time, and we're hoping we can invite you back as we invited Amy back on Sunday, but now that we've got you, we have got you, so...
Absolutely.
You are a public defender.
That is correct.
Or a public pretender, as some of us like to call the people who are offer their clients 5 minutes in the hallway before rushing in to urge a plea bargain.
Yeah, I've heard that one before, and dump truck as well.
Well, what do you think? Is that a fair criticism of the public defender's office, or are you guys getting a bum rap?
Well, I mean, I think that you can't overgeneralize. That's the first thing. I think, for the most part, we're getting a bum rap. I'm not going to say that there's not, individuals out there in any large office. I happen to think our office offers a very high quality, but especially in some of the larger offices in larger cities, I've got to believe there are problems out there. You know, this is what you're mostly hearing is most individuals who end up getting arrested and having to deal with our criminal justice system don't enjoy the process. And when you don't enjoy the process, you certainly aren't going to enjoy your attorney a lot of the time.
Well, I don't know. I have to kind of take an issue with you there, Charlie. I think it's a question of whether the attorney is willing to, you know, stand up for you or wants to spend his or her time urging you to lie down and take it in the chops. And I know sometimes, of course, you're going to, it's really true that an attorney's best call on a situation is, well, if you do go for a jury trial, they're going to be much meaner and nastier toward you than if you just do what 95%, is it 95%? Maybe you can give us the stats of the people do and just lie down and take your plea bargain and shut up and take probation or whatever it is.
Yeah, I would say it's probably maybe closer to 90%, but mm-hmm. somewhere in there, I would agree. Most cases resolve short of a dismissal or going to trial, whether a trial is a conviction or an acquittal or somewhere in between.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the reality of it. But I don't necessarily think that's because of public defenders. I think that's kind of more endemic of the system. You actually see, I think, a tendency towards it in a lot of situations more with a private defense attorney, where there's going to be actually an increased monetary cost for going to trial more than with public defenders, who really, I think, do get a bum rap in that regard, have nothing to lose with taking their client to trial.
Well, isn't it true, though, that if you pay a private attorney, you're going to pay him by the hour and probably at a higher rate than you would pay a public defender who... What's the situation? How much does your a working class person? Because many folks are, you know, sort of they're in the edge of homelessness. But when the judge says, "Are you making any money?" they say, "Yeah, enough to keep my rent going."
Yeah.
And he'll assess a fee. What's the average amount of time you spend with a client before I say a plea bargain misdemeanor case?
A misdemeanor case?
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've been on a misdemeanor calendar.
Uh huh.
But if you average out the time between the cases where you end up spending entire weeks in trial, the average would be very high. But that wouldn't be a good representation. Probably on the majority of the cases, you end up spending, I would say, somewhere around hour to 2 hours, something like that, depending on the complexity of the case, plus time. And that's the side of time having to meet with clients that often you spend an hour alone meeting with a client, whether it be in jail or at your office or over a phone contact, depending on the client.
You know, maybe you've spent an hour meeting with misdemeanor clients. Every misdemeanor case I've ever had, the public defender has spent no more than 10 or 15 minutes meeting with me and the other clients. I'm thinking of politically charged cases involving arrests for trespass or soup serving at the beginning of the decade when Marty Wormhout had us all arrested for serving free soup. And, you know, this kind of stuff... Usually, you get very little time from the public defender, and if you want to try to mount any kind of a political trial, that is to say, you try to, you know, drop the time waiver, demand an immediate trial so that they can't keep dicking you around for, you know, appearance after appearance, you'll get all kinds of flack from the public defender who will, first of all, they'll try to exclude other people from the conversation you have with them, shouting attorney-client privilege, and then when you say, hey, I'm the client and I want this person with me, they will do their best to use what's called client control, you know, and they'll try to, you know, it's a sort of a...
Well, Robert...
I'm a hostile toward the process, I got to tell you.
No, I don't blame you, and I don't blame anyone who's been through the process, having been through bits and pieces of it myself at times. It's a hostile process towards the defendant, and that I totally agree with you. I can't speak to your individual cases. I don't know of what happened to you, and I can't say... And you very well may be right. You personally may have been screwed in certain situations. I'm not saying that hasn't happened. I can only speak to my own personal experiences, and there have been cases where I have spent 10 minutes on it, but I wouldn't spend 10 minutes on a case if I didn't think that I was able to get the best situation out for that individual. And it doesn't necessarily mean, for me, it's never been, you know, I can only speak for myself here, the gravity of the case. I've spent 10 minutes on a more serious case if I knew it was going to be able to get a very good resolution for the client, mm-hmm. and I'd spend hours and hours on a simple trespass case if that's what it was going to take.
Well, let's talk about some of the specific cases you've been involved with, because I know you and I kind of last spoke a couple years ago about a case, is it the Robert Steffen case I'm thinking of?
Yeah.
Robert Stephan, of course, was the bag man, as I call him, of Pacific Avenue. And of course, now I understand he's doing just fine, living in housing.
That's what I've been told.
Off near the university and doing, you know, fairly well. And, you know, he was a man who I found, you know, he had a political platform. He was running for president on a sort of a 60s platform of all the kinds of liberal, sort of mild socialist measures that people kind of took for granted 30 years ago, but now are considered rank treason. And he had this sign on the avenue and so forth. And
always very polite to everyone who came by.
He was very polite, and he was, of course, arrested 3 times for trespass at the Homeless Services Center after he was refused admission to the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, which is the program which only allows, in the most of the year, there are only like 39 spaces. I think there were even less when he was involved, for 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people. So
yeah,
it was quite a feather to get into the program.
It was kind of crazy. He was being arrested for being homeless and trying to sleep at the homeless shelter.
Right, and when they wouldn't let him in the program, he said, "Look, I'll sleep on the porch if you're not going to let me in the program." And of course, Ken Cole in the Homeless Services Center called the police on him 3 times, and the third time actually took him into a trespass trial. Is that accurate?
That's correct. They actually get this. None of the times did we waive time. So in a misdemeanor case, you have a right to a trial within 30 days if you're in custody.
Mm-hmm.
So on about both the first 2 times, around the 28th, 29th day, just when we were preparing to go to trial, the case was dismissed over Robert's and my representing his objection to this because he had just spent all this time in jail.
Mm-hmm.
He was released then from jail because at that point there was no more case, went right back to the homeless shelter, and each time was arrested that very same day for doing the exact same thing. So it was actually the third time when he had spent, by this point, about 2.5, close to 3 months in jail, mm-hmm. that he finally got his jury trial.
And tell me about that jury trial, how that went.
Well, unfortunately, Robert was convicted.
Right, I know the outcome, but I want to, what was the process? How long did it take? What was your impression of the jurors? What kind of arguments were made?
To my recollection, it's been a couple of years now. It was 3 to 4 days, but there was an entire day of what are called motions in limine, the outside the jury's presence, kind of the preliminary motions to find out what evidence, and essentially the judge is going to be letting in, what type of larger arguments to be made. And that's where the necessity defense in Robert's case failed. I was listening to your interview earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately,
who was the judge?
It was Judge Danner.
No wonder.
Well, I think one of the problems was in Robert's particular case is Robert was not, he wasn't thinking about preparing himself for a trial. He was thinking he wanted to try to find a platform for his points of view. And I applaud him for doing that. However, unfortunately, he didn't look into different alternatives to the one homeless shelter there. I think if he had, he would have had a perfect legal defense because I think he would have run into the same problems. But he was very clear about it. He had targeted this one particular location. And I think under a correct reading of the law, that doesn't quite...
Well, actually, I think you're wrong on that, Charlie, because I think that the ICORN decision, which perhaps was out...
It was at that time.
You know, it states that you don't actually have to go looking for a room on that night. If it is general knowledge that the shelters are full, and there every other place is equally illegal.
Well, but Robert, that's why part of the problem is he wasn't kicked out of the shelter because it was full.
No, they claimed he was kicked out for behavioral problems.
Yeah, and he testified to the same.
Well, that really isn't that relevant. What's relevant is even if you're kicked out for behavioral problems, you have the right to sleep. And if he had a choice of sleeping unsafely in the street and illegally in the street, or sleeping on the porch of the shelter where he was doing nothing wrong, not the shelter, but the administrative offices of the shelter, it seems to me that Danner is in a position of suggesting an alternative. And I'll bet my boots that Danner made no such suggestion.
Not to my recollection.
Right. See, I think that, and you know, I mean, and it's a hard call. I mean, these guys who successfully argue the necessity defense, I mean, it sounds like Maurer has
he had a great plan set up down there. They really set up their cases very well. I applaud what he's doing down there.
He also has spent, you know, I mean, he's spending all his time literally all his legal time. He's retired from the public defender's office to fight infractions for homeless people. I mean, this is the kind of thing that you think of Saint Robert doing, where I think of where Saint Robert, if you may remember, is Bob Myers of the city attorney of Santa Monica. Here was a man who refused to craft a law that would criminalize homeless people for, well, it would disallow people from feeding homeless people in parks. And the city council demanded he craft that law. He refused. And for a decade, he was able to stay on as city attorney because of a peculiarity in Santa Monica, which requires a five out of the seven council votes to dismiss the city attorney. And they could never quite get the majority until 92 or 93 when he refused to craft an anti-sleeping law. So Maurer is a very unusual situation, but he's spending a lot of time on it. You are running around trying to do 73 different kinds of cases at once. It sounds like you're now in felony court doing stuff there. Is that right? Is that what you're up to?
Yeah. So I gotta say, I don't think, given the facts of Robert's case, that it would have changed the outcome. But that's just my opinion.
Oh, no, but tell us more, because we are talking about Robert's case.
Well, no, I think it more turned in his situation. Robert was making some very specific decisions about what behavior he would participate in and wouldn't. And it wasn't clear whether every shelter would kick him out, because what Robert wouldn't do was manual labor of any kind whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Now that's an interesting question. In fact, it came up at City Council two nights ago. Mm-hmm. You may know that.
I didn't know that.
Well, there was a sort of a provision of the camping ban was made worse in a City Council amendment, which, if it's passed again in a second reading, will criminalize all camping in side yards and backyards for 27 days out of every calendar month. Unlike the current situation, which allows people to camp in fenced-off side yards and backyards 30 days a month with the permission of the owner. I mean, provided no other laws are being violated and provided there's no other problems.
So if I get you correctly, someone, let's say, who's parking a trailer on your friend's property to live there now would have to move out for 3 days a month?
No, 27 days a month.
Oh, the other way around.
Correct. In other words, this is the Kennedy-Porter PREMAC resolution, which now criminalizes. And it's not just being in a trailer, it's setting up a tent. If you set up a tent on private property in a backyard, you can only do so 3 days per month if this law goes into its second reading. Also, there currently is a law which allows you to park your vehicle in a business parking lot, two vehicles total and as a maximum, for as long as a business owner allows you to do so. Now they're limiting that to 3 days per calendar month. I guess the theory is that it's good training for homeless people to spend a lot of time awake to think about their situation. So
I hadn't heard about that. That is kind of draconian.
I mean, I'm kind of going around the maypole here, because the third thing they did was the most relevant here. They made a decision about camping in parks. And we're talking not about all the parks in town or all the greenbelt areas or much of the city-owned property, which would have been a real significant advance. Instead, because they didn't want to address the so-called Camp Paradise issue, you may be familiar with that.
Yeah.
This is the Camp Paradise's supporters got City Council kicking and screaming to supposedly ask the staff to look into three sites on the three specific sites. The sites were the they didn't like the three sites, the supporters, but they took what they could get. They were San Lorenzo Benchlands, the De La Vega, Lower De La Vega Park, and the Harvey West. This was ordered on October 23rd. Crone, when he became mayor, promised this stuff would come back, but it has not come back. 3 months later, Camp Paradise, as of Saturday, will be illegal. It can't be in the state parks anymore because of the anti-homeless only 1 month per year in a state park rule. So it's going to be out, and it will have to be start to camp illegally unless it finds a private place to go. So the city council, instead of addressing this issue, came up with this bizarre little amendment, which says that they gave Parks and Rec Director Jim Lang the power to, provided this is again given a second reading and again passes, gave him the power to, for only 15 people or less, and for only 2 weeks in any one of these parks, if this is a restoration or conservation group that has meets eight different stringent conditions, including, and they added CEQA requirements to already seven strong conditions, which are liability insurance, security, porta pot. I mean, you name it. This is a whole list of things, which I know these things
are ridiculous,
impossible to get for many people. The Santa Cruz Service Corps, as you may know, is this group working with Camp Paradise, who has been trying to offer jobs to homeless people, and Camp Paradise has been providing work workers for different projects, and to, as far as I hear, quite successfully. But instead of addressing this issue, the council, of course, has come up with this face-saving little maneuver that makes it, first of all, it spreads paranoia through the community, because I think the camping ban is being lifted, which it is not in any way, shape, or form. It's being harshened rather than lifted. There's this teeny, tiny exception if you can mount all these conditions. But the reason I brought this up is because at the mic, a man came up and talked to this issue. His name was Scott. And he came up and he said, I'm concerned about the slave labor situation where a person in Santa Cruz will not be able to sleep unless she or he offers to provide slave labor for the right to be on a piece of property.
Oh, that's a good time. You're absolutely right. That's more or less exactly what Robert was saying.
Keith Sugar, the city council member, said, this is out of order. You can't discuss this. Of course, you know, he continued to discuss it. We were outraged at this.
Well, it seems appropriate to discuss.
Of course it
because
is.
They're requiring it, it sounds like, aside from all the monetary needs of setting up all the stuff, porta potty and whatnot, you need to be ready to provide physical labor to do some sort of chore for the city.
Right. I mean, it obviously was a part of the proposal, and the reason he didn't want it brought up was because this man was addressing it in the larger context of the sleeping ban provisions that the city council was refusing to address. Now, it seems to me Robert Steffen was essentially saying something quite similar. He was saying that I am not going to engage in slave labor, manual labor here, for this group simply for the right to sleep legally somewhere. I mean, I don't insist on sleeping legally in the ISSP program, but I insist on the right to sleep legally somewhere.
I do believe that's pretty much exactly what you said.
And I think the ICORN decision, even at that time, said that that is the essence of the necessity defense. Sleep is a necessity.
Oh, but Robert, the part that he didn't establish, and we did not, there was not a record of it.
Already?
Is that he had tried other shelters to find out within San Cruz. There was no record. There was no evidence that the other shelters would have turned him down had he refused to, in this case, he had refused to sweep up part of the patio area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree
with you that had he gone there, it would have had the same result. But we did not have the record for the judge to make the decision.
But, and my point to you is that in the ICORN decision, there was no record of his having gone to shelters, at least within a year of his actual, this man in Santa Ana, James ICORN, who was the key person in this case, or the person in the case. If it was common knowledge that there was no shelter that night, and that could have been your testimony, or the testimony of an expert witness, Mr. Public Defender.
It couldn't have been my testimony. I couldn't have been.
No, you could have called up those agencies and said, was there any shelter that night for this person?
And that's the problem. Is there was.
Where was their shelter?
At that point, there was at the Armory, and that was what the district attorney presented in that case. Is that the Armory was available that night?
And the Armory, of course, is the pretext that they're going to try to use to sweep Camp Paradise away when it comes out in 3 days.
Robert, agree with the underlying problem with this. I think under a technical thing, and I think if Robert had gone to the Armory...
No, your point is well taken,
he would have been able to establish the necessity defense. I think he needed to do more. What Mr. Maurer's been doing in Santa Barbara is plan ahead for a legal court battle as opposed to plan for a political platform.
I hear that.
Which he was able to do that side of it fairly successfully. He did get a few days with some jurors. He eventually was able to at least expose those 12 people plus an alternate of his message. I have no idea whether it in any way...
Did you talk to any of the jurors afterward? I mean, did they take a long time in making this decision? Or?
They actually took a little bit longer than I thought because, technically speaking, we didn't have a defense. I argued for a long time, essentially for nullification, which... for some stupid reason is illegal for me to argue, but I still essentially argued that anyway.
And Danner didn't shut you up, and so you cannot... And for those who don't know, nullification is the right of the jury to make a decision not just about the facts, but about the justice of the law, right?
Exactly.
Or the applicability of the law.
I think it's rooted in the origins of the jury system. Not necessarily in America's legal system, but potentially even there as well. But certainly in the jury system, the right to nullify seems to be in its earliest roots.
So are you subjecting yourself to potential disqualification and disbarring through admitting here on the air that you made an argument for nullification?
I don't believe so. No.
I would hope not.
No.
Well, perhaps we can have
I don't think I was fooling any one of the judicial officers in the courtroom either. I just think they didn't want to create any issues by stopping me from doing what I was doing.
How How long did this your argument session take in this trial? Is it lasted 3 or 4 days?
Oh, the argument session certainly took less than that. The argument session would have mine would have been less than an hour, and how long I don't recall now.
Did Robert testify himself on the stand?
He testified not in front of the jury, but in front of Judge Danner about the whole situation, what led him there. Robert chose not to testify in front of the jury. I obviously don't know all the reasons why. My feeling is as strong as this. If you may recall from, I think you've met him, he was a very shy man.
Yes.
And he, as I said, I think he just didn't want to testify in front of the jury.
Well, I do recall, I observed his performance in court, I guess a year or two later, when he successfully fought an injunction that Bunny's Shoes was
absolutely
able to get, barring him from being on the bench in front of Bunny's Shoes.
Was, that stupid restraint order was finally lifted.
It did. It took a while. I guess that was in front of, I don't remember the judge who did it.
You remember.
Was that, that wasn't Stevens the Elder, was it?
Yes.
Well, I'm not going to hold that against you, then, letting this criminal go when he could have been, drummed out of town on a rail, or at least in a garbage bag. So, the necessity defense, I've actually got the necessity defense before me here, and I'm going to read the elements of the necessity defense for those who are kind of, because this show was kind of trying to focus on that. The necessity defense, as described by In re Eichhorn, which is a 1998 case you can find, Eichhorn is spelled E-I-C-H-O-R-N, that's I-N-R-E, those are two different words, In re Eichhorn, 1998. In that case, the Court of Appeal found the necessity defense could be interposed where the defense is established when the defendant violated the law, and here come the conditions, and there are six of them: 1, to prevent a significant evil; 2, with no adequate alternative; 3, without creating a greater danger than the one avoided; 4, with a good faith belief in the necessity; 5, with such belief being objectively reasonable; and 6, under circumstances in which he did not substantially contribute to the emergency. Now, in the Eichhorn case, of course, this was a man who was in Santa Ana and who was sleeping downtown, and the judge said, "Oh, well, why don't you just, the trial judge said, well, you should have tried to rely on friends, or you should have contacted all the shelters, you should have walked to another town." And the Supreme Court of California said, no, sleep is in fact a necessity, and it's not that the man necessarily should be excused from following the law, but at least he should have been allowed to present a necessity defense. Is that your understanding of the case?
That is exactly. And that's the same, I had told you before that we had about a day of pretrial motions. That's where Robert testified. You just nailed down the issue of what we were discussing there.
Now, he was not allowed to present the necessity defense.
He was not, and I disagree with that ruling. But
you did not appeal that ruling.
Did not appeal it.
And why not?
As I said, I think that there was a basis on the record. I have to look at what is a viable legal appeal, and though I disagree with it, because I think it's a practical matter that the same result would have happened wherever Robert went, Robert testified very honestly on the stand, and this is what I have to evaluate my legal opinion on, is that he hadn't tried the other shelters, and he honestly did not know if they would, and specifically we started talking about the Armory, if they would have required him, the opposite, would have kicked him out or refused him service if he refused to do physical labor.
And this, in fact, would mean that the element requiring a good faith belief in the necessity was, even though it was the objectively reasonable conditions were there, whether he believed them or not, he did not have a good faith belief that there was a necessity because he was unwilling to try other alternatives. This is what you're saying?
That's essentially what Judge Danner had ruled, and I didn't think that there was a legal basis for an appeal. As I told you, I myself disagree with the ruling. I think Judge Danner had the room to make the proper ruling had he wanted to.
Now, have you... A critic like myself, hearing a public defender not do an appeal, often would say, well, of course, they're not going to spend a lot of time on that sort of thing. That's just how it is. And have you ever done an appeal on an issue involving a poor person and involving at a misdemeanor level?
I've done 4 or 5 misdemeanor appeals.
Based on?
Mostly trial error. Trial error and also suppression motion, what I considered error. One of them ended up being what is called a writ of mandate. So it was what I considered a double jeopardy error. You know, so those are different. Those are the different appeals I've done for misdemeanor cases. All my clients were on. I mean, all my clients are indigent. I provide indigent defense. That's as to their individual income, I certainly don't know.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've read you these necessity conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever used a necessity defense or contemplated one in any other cases?
Yeah, in a medical marijuana case.
Tell me about that.
There was a case that was for over an ounce of marijuana, misdemeanor, punishable 6 months in jail. And the individual had a medical marijuana prescription, but he had received it after the time that he was arrested. And the way the law works around Proposition 215 and those prescriptions is that if it basically, it's not strictly a necessity defense, but it's the same elements. If you get the prescription later, why didn't you get earlier? Did you have no other legal or alternatives to using the marijuana, such as other painkillers, whatever the situation may be?
Mm-hmm. How did that case go?
Once again, the defense was denied, same judge.
Judge Danner.
Yes.
This is the former district attorney who many of us have accused of malfeasance for not taking a drunk driving test in 1988 and other matters that indicated to us his judicial unfitness, and not to mention his behavior in the courtroom. And I say this all because, not just because I'm trying to take a few swipes at Art, or Drumhead Danner, as I like to call him, but because I think it's important that people demystify these people in positions of public power. You know, I mean, you've got some good things to say about Art Danner that might make me feel better about him?
Well, I mean, I do disagree with the rulings of the two cases we just discussed. I'll say this, I had recently been speaking with some colleagues, and we all agreed that of, you know, judges out there, he's one of the ones we like to practice in front of. His demeanor, I think, and his towards defendants in general, I think is very fair. There's specific issues I certainly disagree with him on, but I think he's kinder, if that means
he's
anything.
A kinder, gentler judge.
Yes, I mean, but kinder, gentler judges can make harsh rulings on the law that mm-hmm. you know make me disagree with them. But I do think he tries.
We're talking with Charlie Stevens, a public defender in the Santa Cruz court system. Charlie, you've been also doing a lot of work around Proposition 36, and we have no time to talk to you about that. But I really want to talk to you about it. I'm wondering if you're going to be available possibly this weekend for a part two discussion, because, you know, the time just slipped away, as we say in business.
Why don't you talk to me, give me a call tomorrow, if you can, and I can try to work that out.
I appreciate that.
And if not this weekend, I'm sure we can work out a time at another point.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Charlie.
Okay, Robert.
All righty. We are rolling towards the end of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm going to try to catch the Santa Cruz Service Corps gang before they disappear and before we disappear for a 3-minute update on what's going on with Camp Paradise, since Camp Paradise will be... Hey there, Santa Cruz Service Corps. Is this the notorious Larry Bad Boy Templeton?
Larry Good Boy Templeton.
Oh, well, that depends on who you talk to, I guess. So now I understand from rumors about that you are due to leave the New Brighton Beach Sanctuary for the cold world outside.
Huh.
Is that rumor true?
Well, yeah.
And is it true that you are intending to set up on public property, or is there a chance that you may be disappearing into the West Side private property somewhere?
Well, it's... whatever looks better before we have to do that.
I see. So you're still not sure whether this is going to be a public tent city to which all homeless can come?
Well, even if we do the other, we're still going to help the homeless.
Really?
We don't stop helping them.
Okay.
You know, even if we get a place where we can set up our home, we're still going to go out and help people. Even if we have to help them set up another Camp Paradise, too. You know?
Really?
We're willing to do this.
Even if Paul Lee objects?
Paul Lee ain't going to object. Read Paul Lee's book. Look where the man's heart is.
Well, I hope that you will
just
stand up for this.
Yeah, man, Tom Schaefer, this ain't just a goal for the Santa Cruz Service Corps. This is a goal to change the homeless community. And you know what it takes to do that?
Tell me.
The homeless community.
Right, and of course, a lot of the rest of us, too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And you know, you get people that are that live in homes that know the law better than a lot of homeless people. But the concern that you guys show for us is what gives the homeless people the will to fight as they do.
Well, I think you give the houseless community, you and the folks out there who are standing up to this kind of pressure, whether it be
Sir
Officer Seeley or whatever.
I've had a lot of homeless people. I mean, I've heard the statement over and over and over. The reason that the homeless people are so bad is because of the people that live in their homes. They'll go out and rip open their own bag of trash, I heard one person state, and then come out and yell at him, because the homeless person's looking in his other can for bottles and cans,
Well, we don't want your kind lingering around here too long, Larry.
Well, sorry about your bad luck. I am 41 years old. I plan on living a lot longer than a lot of people, so I'm here to stay.
So how can folks get involved if they want to? Are you still issuing a call for people to come support you on Saturday, or is that on hold, or what's the story?
That's on hold. I mean, we don't want anybody to think that we need the help.
Mm-hmm.
We've always done it ourselves, but we appreciate everybody willing to jump right in there and help us is cool, just as cool as hell.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I ain't got the words to thank them. But what's so neat is we want to do it. We told them we're self-supporting. We do things ourselves. We don't need their city council telling us what to do. We have a council of our camp. We have a council with some of the supporters. And we don't make it out a separate meeting no more. Everybody's involved in the meetings if they want to come.
And so I know you canceled your last community meeting on Wednesday. When's the next meeting?
This coming Wednesday. Every Wednesday there will be no more cancellations.
Mm-hmm.
Every Wednesday at 7 o'clock.
And that's at the addresses?
Yes.
Which address?
745 River Street.
All righty. And the phone number to call is
423-8636.
Thank you, Larry.
If anybody needs to know about setting up the tent city, give us a call. I got some good information for you.
I may be doing that. And Thank you very much for being on the air again, Larry.
All right, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's it for Free Radio Santa Cruz's Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Stay tuned for that fine. Well, I found it on the wall here. From the cream to the dregs, and the dregs are leaving, and the cream is coming in. So check it out and stay with us. Tune in again on Sunday at 10 o'clock for the extended Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Call 423-HUFF, 423-4833 between times for any other additional information and updates. Thanks for being with us.
People everywhere going out of their minds, looking for answers and symbols and signs. There ain't no answers up in the sky. You know we got to give the earth a try. You gotta get down a little closer to the ground. That's what you have to do. Get down a little closer to the ground. Now those men up there walking on the moon, they better get themselves back home soon. They're gonna lose themselves in the upper air. Nothing happened up there. You gotta get down a little closer to the ground. But you know you do. Get down a little too long. Now if you spend your days talking to a machine, you might forget you're a human being. Don't let them make a fool of you. Remember who you're talking to. You gotta get down a little closer to the ground. But you know you do. Get down a little closer to the ground. Now if you can't feel pain and you can't feel love, let go of what you're thinking of. You're too far away from where you were at further. Get down to earth. Get down a little closer to the ground. That's what you have to do. Get down a little closer to the ground. Let me hear it again now. Get down a little closer to the ground. Come on now. Get down a little closer to the ground. Got to move closer, a little closer together now, a little closer to the ground.
Now if you get down on your knees, you're gonna feel that the earth is dear. No use looking to the upper side, cause you're living it right down here. Here on earth, on solid ground. Yeah! Oh, 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 yeah. You know you got to move.